And welcome to another edition of Fool's Daily. My name is Dan, and with me tonight I have...
Hello, this is Adam from War More Radio, and thank you for having me on.
Sure, thanks for coming back again. Just recently you did a podcast on Dreadball, I heard it, and I decided I wanted to know more about the game, so I figured I'd get you back on here and talk to you a little bit.
Yeah, and you know, Dreadball, it's actually really fun, really simple game, and in terms of just getting into it's been one of the most, you know, easy and accessible games that I've played easily in the like past 10 years. And I played Blood Bowl, so.
There you go. Well, speaking of the past 10 years, I noticed that you didn't actually give your 30-second gamer history on your episode. So yeah. Let's go ahead and go through that. Give us your 30-second gamer history.
Let's see. I've gamed quite a bit since, this is my 10th year as a miniature gamer, but I've gamed long before that, of course, with video games and then card games as well. And what really attracted me to miniature games, of course, around 2004, we had Lord of the Rings come out in the theaters, which went to the local hobby store, and they were selling Lord of the Rings. But, of course, I ignored that and went straight to the Warhammer 40K and Warhammer Fantasy stuff.
Don't we all?
Because, you know, why not? And after debating a lot of things, you know, I picked up Tau as my first army, and I, you know, got bored of only shooting things, even though it was fun. Yep. It's fun. Picked up Orcs.
Jump, shoot, jump.
Yeah, that was pretty much it, 4th edition 40K.
Yeah,
the Tau were good, but they were never really the best army in 4th, but they were decent. I just didn't like how the metal broadsides, the feet would break, and all the crisis suits were like terribly designed miniatures, which would snap at the ankle every time, and I don't think they've really improved that much. But then, yeah, I went to Orcs, which is awesome, because, you know, Orcs are amazing. It was the first army where you really felt like you could do everything, like anything in any phase. Like, you had your movement, you had lots of orcs running across the table, you had lots of shooting, because you would usually take a huge volume of, like, random shooting guns, and combat was amazing with 30 orcs against 5 Terminators. You know, this is back when the Choppa was reduce your armor save to a 4+ roll, which was pretty awesome.
That's pretty sweet.
And just to quickly finish up 30 seconds, which I've probably blown already, is Warhammer Fantasy. I was really into our competitive tournament scene up here. Did that for about 5 to 6 years, competitive fantasy. Did the Empire, Dark Elves, and Skaven armies, 3,000 points, all painted and based for tournaments. And yeah, it was really awesome. You know, I mean, Fantasy, even now with 8th edition, it's still my favorite edition of the game, and I've played since 6th edition Fantasy, so definitely really fun. Enjoyed that quite a bit. And of course, as the prices went up with Games Workshop stuff, War Machine came out, loved the game, played that, Protectorate of Menoth, and then, you know, as more games over the last couple of years have started trickling down into the ecosystem, you know, run into Dreadball, and then recently Dead Zone as well, so I'm enjoying those quite a lot. There we go.
Excellent. Kind of all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
I like it.
There's more too, but I can't. I don't want to.
30 seconds.
Hour and 25. Right.
So on to the topic of Dreadball. So starting off, let's just start with an easy one. What is the buy-in cost of the game? Like, how much is it going to cost me to get a team, rule book, playing field, etc.?
Now, there's a couple ways to get into Dreadball, and it's a bit awkward because of the way that the starter set is designed. For like $68 Canadian, so it'll be cheaper for Americans. And I believe the English as well, you know, because Canadian prices are always just slightly above.
Sure. Yep.
But the starter box is really good if it is a little bland, because you start getting the corporation team, the male corporation team, and the Marauder Orc team. And at first, you know, at first glance, you know, it's kind of generic because you have humans versus orcs and it's like kind of space football and, you know,
right.
It doesn't seem that appealing. But when you buy it, it actually is really fantastic value for money because you get the game board, you get the referee model, you get the couple extra dread balls in the case as well. You get the starting cards. That's if you get the regular starter set, which is the Dreadball Deluxe, and currently the special edition version of that, which is the Azure Forest, which I think is exactly the same price. It's just a limited time offer. The only one you want to avoid is the kickoff because it doesn't come with the cards or the ref, and those are good for later on. gives you the two teams, of course, and pretty much everything you need to play gives you rosters where you could write your team name down and your individual player stats and stuff like that if you want for a league environment. And it gives you all the tokens you need to play. And pretty much it's cheap for a start, and I would recommend picking that up. And what I did is, yeah, I picked that up and got three extra teams just to spice up the variety. Comes with a Season 1 rule book. And how it works, so in Dreadball, it was through Kickstarter. So they would release different waves of the Kickstarter, and they would release a new season with each wave, basically. So they're up to Season 3, and each season would release four new teams. They're currently sitting at 12 Dreadball teams with their latest Kickstarter, which was Dreadball Extreme, which is a whole other way to play Dreadball. It's like not – it's actually a different game, but it's similar in like mechanics.
Sure.
And that's coming with 12 new teams as well that was funded with the Kickstarter money. And those 12 teams can play like all – so all 24 teams can play in both games. So you can have 24 teams that play in Dreadball and then 24 teams that can play in Dreadball Extreme. So there's going to be quite a lot of variety for the game in the next year and a half or so, and it's really cheap. I mean, the individual teams for me were only $20 or, yeah, $20 American really was all I paid for
sure.
them. So.
No, that's not too bad.
Yeah. For a full team, yeah.
And that's eight models for a full team?
It varies based on the team. Like some teams will have, like the Jeudouin are only six players, but that's because they start out as only that team. The difference between Blood Bowl and this game is that this game you can either play it as the team you buy, like you buy it straight out of the box, or if you're in a league setting, you can buy additional models to up to 14, I believe, or 11 models,
okay.
I think. I'll have to double check, but you can expand the team, like you can buy these team boosters, which you can add extra models to your team for the variety of sculpts and stuff like that, but... For the most part, if you just want to pick up and go kind of game of Dreadball, you just buy the basic team box and add on later if you want.
Sure. So how long does a typical game take?
This is an interesting variable because I've had it change quite a bit. When I was first getting into the game and I knew very little about it, I'd say it took an hour and a half.
Okay.
Trying to explain to someone who probably hasn't played this kind of style of game before. Luckily, I had a lot of Blood Bowl knowledge as well, so it was a little easier for me to understand. But once I got to the point where I understood how the rules worked just from memory and all that, to teach someone who knows nothing about the game, it only takes about an hour, less at max. So I'd say anywhere between half an hour to an hour. So
nice, and that's with like two people know what they're doing.
That's just with one person knowing what they're doing and one person getting demoed. If you have two,
okay.
If you have two people knowing what they're doing, depending on the teams that are playing and like how competitive the people are, it'll either be over really quickly because the game has a mechanic where if one team scores 7 points, they just auto win.
Right, seven unanswered.
Yeah. So there's ways to end the game like by turn three, but if you're both really skilled at the game, it could drag out to turn 14, which it sounds like, oh wow, 14 turns, it sounds like quite a lot, but it's actually not with the
right
way the game works. Yeah.
Well, that's a perfect segue to the next question. What does a typical turn look like?
Well, during each turn, it's called a rush, is there, you know, because they have to differentiate it between the different games. So
right.
So during your rush, you have five action tokens, and each player can be allocated up to two action tokens during a course of a rush. Now, there's ways to get free actions, but those are generated by your dice rolls, like during an action. So, for instance, if I wanted to slam an opposing model, I spend an action token and I would slam, I'd move the player and slam into the opposing player. And if I wanted to slam again, I could spend a second action token to do that. And based on how I roll, I might actually generate free actions as well, which don't have a limit. So you're guaranteed two mandatory, like you can go up to two actions just allocating them, but you can earn up to as many as you can roll, I guess, extra ones. So.
All right, so that leads us into our next one. How exactly does the dice mechanic work?
I'd say about 95% of the dice tests in this game, because there are exceptions to this, of course, it's a three dice test. And using the slam example, so it's spend an action token, declare I'm going to slam with this model to this opposing model. You'd move the number of hexes you got to move. And because you're moving, you get momentum. So you would add a dice to that test. So three dice test becomes four. Special players like guards, which are really good at hitting people, they just get an extra dice because, you know, they're just awesome at smashing people. So optimally, you'd get five dice against your opponent. And your opponent, based on what they are, might be able to slam you back or dodge away. And they would throw three dice as well, but there's other modifiers that might reduce that, right? Like if you have players in base contact with them, that takes away a dice, etc.
Support.
And so you roll your dice, and it's just you have your two different dice pools, and you're kind of comparing the results between the two. So if I get four successes, so if I roll four dice that work, and my opponent only rolls like one success, then we'd subtract the difference. So four minus one is three, which means I win that slam. But because I did it so well, like I doubled him, his results, so three versus one, that's more than double. I'm actually knock him over, and that's when damage can happen where so what you do in that situation is he gets another roll, so three dice test again, whatever his armor stat is, and you'd roll it, and you'd compare those successes to what you did for damage, which would have been three in this case. And the dice that he, like the successes he gets, will negate the damage coming in. So if he doesn't roll any successes, that's just 3 points of damage, which puts him, he's out of the game for three turns.
Oh, geez.
So he gets teleported away to the, I guess, the bench to heal for three turns.
The infirmary?
Yeah. And if you actually do four more damage to a model, they're just outright killed if you don't save any of the armor checks. So.
Sure.
Yeah.
And so, like, these tests that you're making, as I've come to understand recently, it's usually just based on a stat that just says this character has 3+ for this skill.
And, you know, I'm really surprised that other games haven't really done it, done this idea where, like, if you look at Warhammer 40K, you have your ballistic skill, which then you take the number 7, you subtract your ballistic skill from that. So if you have a ballistic skill of 3, you know, 7 minus 3 is 4 is what you need, 4+ on your roll. All Mantic games did is they took that concept and they just made it one step shorter. They said, no, you just need a 4+. So your strength value could be 3+, speed is like, you know, 4+, etc. So.
Sure, makes it really simple.
Yeah, and it's surprisingly how, like, it's awesome how simple and easy it is to understand. And also, you know, like, if you have strength 3+, you don't want to be going against another guy that has, if your opponent has strength 3+, you don't want to have a guy that's, like, strength 5+ going against that, because...
Right, yeah. He's going to get his butt kicked.
Exactly.
Interesting. All right, so I've heard you can also pass in this game. Is passing as impossible as it is in Blood Bowl?
No, definitely not. This is probably my favorite part of the game because it's just so fluid and just exciting because this taps into that free actions I was talking about earlier. How it works is you have a front arc and a back arc, which is just your 180 across the model with the shoulders usually, similar to like War Machine Hordes where you just have your front arc and your back arc. Now, you can pass to anyone in their front arc, so if your player's turned around, you can't throw at their back, because you'll end up hitting them with the ball, which could hurt. You can actually damage your players, which you don't want to do. So the only way a model is able to catch the ball is if both players are facing each other, which I think is just cinematic already. So you throw the ball, you do your three dice test, which you use your skill stat. If you get at least one success... the pass is successful. If you double, though, you get to make – if you're the thrower, you get to – there's a special action called the showboat, which is more important for league play because this helps players level up and stuff like that.
Sure, build experience.
It's like, it's just going down the line. Then the catcher – this is where it gets really important is that the catcher makes – well, the catch roll with their skill test as well. If they get at least one success – they catch the ball and, you know, it's no frills, kind of catch the ball. If you double, of course, this is where the fun begins. You get a free action, which can be either a move or a throw. So often you'll use this to reposition to get into a strike zone. And then you'll spend an actual act, like a regular action, to just throw with that model. And because the free action doesn't count as previously moving, you count as not moving when you're throwing to score the point. So that's how
nice.
Yeah, free actions kind of like one turn, like just to give you an example of how I actually have used this in the past. In one turn, I was able to go from 0 points to like got a 4-pointer because it's similar to basketball in that way that if you're farther in the zone, you can actually get an additional point. So I got a 4-pointer, so went from 0 to 4 points with 3 actions, which is great.
Nice.
Yeah.
So here's a question about the action. So I mean, it's a I have 5 actions, then my opponent has 5 actions.
Yes.
So it's kind of a little back and forth there. So
I guess during a turn, once you use all your 5 actions, then your rush is over. So really, if you think about it, 14 rushes means that you have 7 turns and your opponent has 7 turns.
Okay.
So
that cuts it in half.
Yeah.
7-turn game.
So it's not really your opponent doesn't get to move while it's your turn. And it's similar to Blood Bowl in the sense that if you screw up an action, like if you fail to pick up the ball, then your turn is just over. Or if you score, the ball, you know, is scored and a new one gets relaunched and the turn is over. Stuff like that happens.
Sure.
So
do you lose possession of the ball at the end of your rush, or does the opponent then have to take it from you at the end of your 5 actions?
If you pick up the ball, the ball, if it's anywhere, it's fine. Nothing weird happens. If you just pick up the ball, you still hold on to it. You don't just give it up with your opponent. He has to try to take it away from you.
Okay.
So you can get into some really interesting situations where if you're more of a bashing team, you're going to pick up the ball and have the guy hide in the corner while, you know, and not score till the end of the game while you're just grinding the opposing team down.
Sure.
Versus a throwing team where they're going to want to pick up the ball as fast as possible, get into a good throwing position and just score like crazy.
Nice. So there's a bit of variety in spice between the different teams then.
Yeah. And it's not as clear cut as I make it sound. Like a team can be bashy, but a lot of the teams are so diverse that they have other elements in it. It's not like in Blood Bowl where if you play an elf team, you're very much not a hitting team. Or if you're a dwarf team, you're very much a hitting team, but you're not really super awesome, you know, throwing the ball and stuff. There's a lot more variety in how the actual dice work, so.
All right, and one last quick question, kind of in the general line of questioning. Do the minis come painted or unpainted?
They come unassembled, unpainted. So it's just like a regular miniature game that way. The only real difference is that it's kind of this miniature game, board game hybrid.
Sure, since you need the field to play on.
And there has been, you know, I've listened to other shows as well, and there has been complaints with the material that the models are made out of. It's called Restic, which is this kind of plastic and resin combination. They find that the mold lines will show a lot more, and it's just not necessarily as amazing product as, let's say, the GW hard plastics.
Sure.
Or even like the Malifaux stuff. But I found that the models are fairly easy to put together. The mold lines can be a little annoying, but to be honest, that doesn't really bother me. But, yeah.
Well, I think we've about hit our ceiling for time on this one. I think we might try to do one more to finish it up, if that's all right by you.
Cool, cool.
All right. Well, with that said, thank you for listening to Fools Daily. I've been Dan.
And I've been Adam.
Bye.
Bye.
You can contact Fools Daily on Twitter. We're at Fools_Daily. Or via email, foolsdaily@outlook.com.